closed session. I've already reported out on the October 7, 2010 closed session at the special meeting on the bankruptcy plan, but I'll repeat it here. At the October 7th closed session, the board approved the disclosure plan for the bankruptcy on a 4-1 vote with Director Sparks dissenting. As today's closed session, we did convene closed session at approximately 6 o'clock. We did discuss several items that are listed. The board also heard an update on the groundwater adjudication, but took no reportable action. Lastly, the board did commence discussions regarding contract amendments or revisions to contract related to the district general manager's contract. The board did give instructions to its negotiator, who is the president. But other than that, took no reportable action. I just want to make one comment, though, that assuming that a contract agreement is reached on a contract amendment, the contract itself or the amended contract will be before the board as a regular public item on the consent calendar. So everybody will get a chance to see that contract as amended. And that concludes my report.
Okay, thank you. With that, then, we'll go to general public comment on items not on the agenda this evening and items under the purview of the board. I'd like to have you either get in line or be ready to speak so we don't have a delay between speakers. So with that, we'll go to our public comment.
Point of order, yes, Marshall. I'd like to speak to the discussion out of closed session.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize.
I only had one question, and I'd like an explanation. I don't believe that it was ever reported out of closed session that you would represent the district in the labor negotiations, and I'd like to know how the board came to that conclusion.
John?
Well, as a practical matter, the board president, for all my clients, has been the contract negotiator for contract amendments with the general manager. So if I'm the one that made that decision to list it as the president as the district's contract negotiator.
Thank you. Okay, with that, then we'll go to general public comment. We have a 3-minute limit. Again, I'd like to appreciate people coming up here, be ready to go. Okay, Al, we'll start with you.
Thank you, Mr. President. And first of all, I'd like to congratulate all the newly elected board members for their successful campaigns and wish consolation to those that lost. My wish is that most people did not understand that letter. It was not an assessment. It is a rates and charges, and if you look at page two at the bottom, there's a title that explains what it is. Under B, it says that the purpose of this, in addition to the other things, is to cover all the expenses, whatever they happen to be, that's not covered by the assessment. So in addition to the capital cost of the $25,000 previous assessment from 2007, whatever is left over in capital costs, which I think is between $40 and $50 million, is included in the cost that you will pay. There's some controversies in how they divide the charges up, and I think probably Mr. Margeson or somebody else could talk about that a little bit, but essentially what it means is that families with children will be paying higher rates than people with smaller households because it's going to be based on the winter flow and it's going to be based on the number of units that you use. So if you have six loads of washing a week and you have six people flushing toilets, you're going to be paying a lot more than somebody who doesn't. So that's kind of controversial, you know, the fairness issue. And I would say that the 218 portion of this could be challenged. So this is pretty unusual way of approaching capital costs. Normally, capital costs were done like we did last time. You have a fixed amount, and it says that's it. This has an open-ended amount, so it's an open check. We don't know what the cost of the sewer is, and because we took away the design build, which guarantees a guaranteed price for the project, that means that you will not know the price is. And thank you.
Thank you. And if I, no, that's okay, Al. Before you go, Fred, could I just was going to announce this at the end, but since Al brought this up, the county is having a public meeting informational session in Los Osos on November 29th at Los Osos Middle School with a presentation about the rates and charges. There'll be an informal question and answer period from 6 to 7, and then a presentation starting at 7 o'clock.
Supporters, it was great out there, going out there, talking to you and shaking your hands, and I'm really humbled by all the support I got, and so I want to thank the public very much. Thank you.
I think the board would like to thank you, too, for your efforts. I thought the campaign was very cleanly and well run by all the candidates, and I appreciate the efforts by everybody.
But Mr. Delegato was the fastest candidate elect or candidate running in the Oktoberfest. He did finish first.
Okay, so with that we'll move on. Thank you, Bo.
Bo Cooper, it's impossible. The people who got that notice, everybody in the prohibition zone, it's impossible to tell from this what your rates are going to be. I went to the Oktoberfest the other day, and people are saying, oh, look, on page 3 or 4, it says, oh, it's only $48, $49. That's my entire sewer cost. And people who seem really intelligent were saying that to me. I need to clarify a little bit. And it's, you can't tell. There was in the staff report from the Board of Supes on October 5th, there was a chart that you need to have in order to make sense of this. The $48, is if there was no water discharge at all, then you add units of water. Like, for example, my wife and I, they're going to go by what the units were in January and February, and they're going to average that out over the year. Lace and I used 5 units of water. 5 units of water is, according to the chart that you don't know, that probably 10 people have in Los Osos, is $86. So it's going to be $86. That's just for the rates and charges. So there's the Prop 218 that we passed 2007. The county says $105. I won't argue the number. $105. For Lacey and I, it'll be another $86 for this. And they that's almost $200. They don't talk about the on-lot costs, which is between $50 and $100. The on-lot costs. Per month. For what they say, whenever they say anything at all, they say $50. That's based on $3,600, which is lowballing what it's going to cost. It's going to be closer to $10,000 total, which is going to be between $1,500 a month. So add it all up, $105, about $96, between $50 and $100. It closes in $275, $300 a month. That's actually what you're going to pay. Again, the county makes it obscure. They continue to do it obscure, and the people need to know. I'm asking, Marshall was good enough to announce the town hall meeting that the county is proposing. Our experience in the past, the town hall can understand, because the town hall meeting of the county just will not give the information that people need. Also, it's very important that people protest the unfairness of it all. There will be letters. It tells how to object within the letter you got. There are letters that will be going around. We may go door to door. We'll still be tabling. If you have any questions, Bo Cooper, P.O. Box 6104 in Los Osos, send me a question. Send me a stamp, and I'll send you a protest form.
Thank you, Bo.
Frank Salil, Los Osos. I'd like to see the CSD have copies of the assessment in the office, also on your website and at the office. Put the phone numbers. I see Marshall's. You know, the one we got in the mail, Marshall, same one you got.
The legal notice.
Have that copies of that for people, just in case they lost theirs or didn't get it for some reason. Also, the phone numbers, not only the phone number that they say here, but also if you put on the website to contact Supervisor Gibson, which he did say, if you have questions about this, you know, you can contact my office also. So I think the citizens should utilize their elected official to get information about this, because it is going to be expensive when you consider $48.85 for a single resident and then $7.54 per unit. So a six-unit, if you average six-unit, you know, you're getting up to $94. Then you have the cost of about $105, I believe it is, for repaying back the $218 that we voted for, the $25,000. So we're looking at $200 right there. If, you know, someday that the vacant properties do vote to join the wastewater system, if they ever can build, that gets to my other issue. So I hopefully that you can put as much information out in your office here locally as possible to help the citizens direct where they can get help with this. I asked five questions of the Board of Supervisor Meacham said, you know, just ask questions. Well, I did. Well, one of the questions was answered out of the five. So I did email him. He did respond back. He had somebody from Public Works respond back. He wasn't able to get Pavel to do it, so somebody else did. One question was the population. What is the build-out population? A lot of pressure is being placed on the water purveyors to make sure there's enough water to build, where the county doesn't seem to be anywhere to be seen in what they can do to help the community and the people who have undeveloped properties to build. Thank you.
Thank you. Lindy? Whoever's going to speak after Lindy, get ready, please.
Good evening here in warm Los Osos. Lindy Owen, and I definitely want to talk also about the new sewer costs that are being added on. The interesting thing is that I've spoken to several people who have not received their letter from the county, and they are property owners. So if they don't receive a letter and they don't have an opportunity to protest these new rates and charges, there's something flawed with the system to begin with. But basically, what I comprehend from this four-page, very confusing letter is that we were basically assessing ourselves for the operation and maintenance, which was going to be about $40 a month estimate. At this point, the empty property owners will no longer be participating in the sewer project until there is magic water delivered to Los Osos. So they are basically going to cost us $27 million more towards paying for this project. So until there's water, they won't be participating, and they want us to pay for it now. So I want people to be real clear. If they go to page 2, at the bottom, there's a paragraph that says, what's the purpose of the proposed sewer charge? And it goes, number one, all the costs of the administration, operation, and maintenance of the wastewater collection and treatment system. That's the O&M that was about $40 a month. And then you go down to C, to provide for repairs and depreciation of the system, to provide for unforeseen emergencies, and to pay for lawful obligations and expenses of the system. That's C, and I don't know if people were aware that we're already being, well, that is going to be part of our costs too, which this is the blank check, unfortunately. But B is where it's the clincher. The portion of the interest, principal, and reserve requirements of the sewer system that is not backed by existing assessments. In other words, everything this sewer costs is going to be added on if you do not protest this letter from the county. And it definitely looks, I don't know if you can see this, but we're on our second sewer assessment, which was $25,000 per home. That comes out to $105,000. Do anything. We have protest forms that we'll be handing out at the farmers market. We need 3,000 property owners to protest this in order to send it back so that we can get a more affordable choice. Thank you.
Thank you. Julie, and then do we have any other speakers?
Richard? Yeah, you have other speakers. Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker, and I guess I am, since it is items not on the agenda, but I'm going to talk about it, too. It's the rates and charges, because it does impact the district, and our community. I got my letter today, postmarked November 2nd. They were busy down there at the county on the 2nd. Something that I noticed and had to, I don't think any of us is an expert on this, and something that jumped out at me is the words minimum charge. If minimum charge is spelled out, then where's the maximum charge? Back in 2007, we were assured that our $25,000 assessments were a maximum. So this is above and beyond that, but then it's only a minimum. So I'd like to know what the maximum rates and charges could or will be. I think what the public is asking the district to do is give us a forum to unspin the spin, because what Pavo and the gang are going to be doing on November 29th at the Los Osos Middle School, it's also our experience that not always is it videotaped, and if it is videotaped, the middle school is not set up to run a live feed. So it's an inferior location for those who are paying attention or even want to just stay home and be able to run down in their pajamas if they get irate, which often happens here. The district will have an opportunity, I hope it's on your agenda for December, to discuss its own properties. I think you do understand, and the community needs to understand, that these same rates and charges will be applied to these properties that belong to the district, in turn driving district costs up, which are then paid by all of us. So I would add math on the amount of money that the septage receiving will take. Our shiny new plant will only take 150 tanks a year. That's a year. We have nearly 5,000 tanks that need to be emptied. If we were relying on our own resources, it's going to take a very long time to decommission the town.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oops, any other speakers?
Hi, Lacey Cooper, Los Osos. Bo kind of ran out of time, so I wanted to let people know that our P.O. box is, it's Bo Cooper, P.O. Box 6104, Los Osos, California, 93412. And you can send your questions there. I'll request a protest letter and send us a stamp, and we'll send you back. We have a protest form. It makes it easier with all the, fill-in blanks in case you want to protest. I guess I would like to also request that a discussion on this issue be itemized for the December 2nd meeting, because there's a lot of good reasons that people brought up, that Julie brought up. But also because I'd like, after the town hall meeting, when people still have questions, it would be nice to have a representative, you know, from the county come and be able to answer our questions. Because there's always follow-up questions in a town hall meeting. You don't get to do that. You submit questions, they answer them. And so if you would be willing to agendize that, I think that would get more information to the community. Also, on this letter, it is on page 2 of this letter, it is hard to figure out how much you will owe. We were at the Oktoberfest trying to educate people about the protests, about the ordinance, and it seems like, okay, they think, oh, $48.85, about $49 a month, because they don't really get, there's no chart, there's no example of what you might pay. And they didn't include, as Bo said, this wonderful chart from October 5th staff report from the Board of Supes that shows that people with more children will be paying more because it's a variable rate. And so they didn't give you an idea, you know, they could have given you an example, like here would be very easy to show that I would pay, about $86. You know, it shows the units of what then your assessment was for. So it's like you're really being assessed $30,000. But they're putting that extra money onto the rates and charges, onto your rates and charges. And you're also paying, which they don't say, is a $10 capital charge in your rates and charges, which is a total of $11 million. And so I'd urge people to protest. Thank you.
Richard, and do we have any other speakers? So we'll close general public comment after Richard.
Marshall, before you start the clock on me, can I just...
I was going to give you, if you're talking about the New Frontiers.
Yes, before I make my regular...
Yes, you can do that free.
Thank you. Just briefly, November 17th, New Frontiers Natural Food Store is doing their 5% donation to a local charity. For November, it will be to the Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter, 5% of total proceeds that day. What's kind of interesting this year, and hopefully to our benefit, is they will be in the new store. The new store is the old Circuit City building by Home Depot. It's going to be about twice the size. The deli area is going to be bigger. They're going to have a eat-in area. And that will, the transition is supposed to happen the weekend before that. I think it's the weekend right before that. But at this point, they will be at the new store. 5% of proceeds that day go to the shelter, and we used that last year towards the matching funds, so their donation actually ended up getting doubled. And last year, it was just short of $1,700. November 17th, all day.
Okay, with that, we'll start now your time. So yes, you're on the clock now.
Okay. Richard Margetson. This notice that came to all of us should have been accompanied by the ordinance, because in order to understand this notice clearly, you need a copy of the ordinance. I think there's a serious flaw in the way they developed the volume charge, the per unit charge of $754. When calculating this out, I'm going to try to make this as simple as possible, but when calculating this out, you have a constant O&M number for the first year that they're estimating. That's the revenue they have to come up with based on the flow to the plant. They divide that back through, and that's how they come up with the per unit charge for your rates and charges, above and beyond the fixed charge, which is for paying for the on-lot cost assessment portion that hasn't been collected yet. What the flaw is in this, and I'm just going to put this out, I think it's going to be common sense to most people, their units on average. You can't tell me that the difference between the average household and the average commercial property is only 1.3 units per account. I took the top, not even the top three, I took three businesses that I know their consumption numbers in Los Osos off of that 10 million gallon total, two laundromats and one restaurant in town, two laundromats and one restaurant, and divide back through, and you get to the 5.3 for the rest of the entire commercial district. And the reason this is important is if the volume number, the flow to the plant number is correct, and it's a larger number, you're dividing the O&M number by a larger number of units that or gallons that are going to the treatment plant, lowers the volume charge. And just in that simple calculation I was telling you about, just that, just taking a more accurate look at what the volume should be from the commercial district, just that example lowers the volume charge 27 cents. Just that. Without even knowing what Golden State gets from Ralph's and Vons and the shopping center. There's a serious flaw here. Right. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, we'll close public comment. I would just like to again repeat that the county will be having their hearing on presentation on November 29th. Informal discussion from 6 to 7, presentation at 7. For informational purposes, I've been told by the county that what you received in the mail are should have received in the mail is the legal notice of the 218. The county will also be mailing out an informational pamphlet or mailer that may or may not address some of these questions, because I haven't been involved nor seen it, but they will also be sending out an informational mailing. The board at its December 2nd meeting will agendize our vote on our 218 properties, so that is an issue that will be discussed before this board. So with that, then, we'll go to the introduction of new staff.
Yes, good evening, President Ohilski, members of the board, members of the audience. It's my pleasure tonight to introduce you to two new faces at the district, Nathaniel Paul. Nathaniel, if you wouldn't mind standing up. Nate is our new water operator, trying to fill the shoes of Jocko Sweet, who retired last year. Nate has worked for the district before when he was part of the group that performed water service line replacements. District has contracted with Justin Finch as the district's water conservation auditor. Justin has been working in the water conservation field for about 4 years and brings with him a wealth of experience in helping residents find ways of reducing their water usage and managing their water bills. Justin has already performed a handful of water audits in Los Osos and is currently targeting the district's highest water users. Once the program gets fully up to speed, we may also start making appointments for other residents in the district, in the district's water service area. Justin recently graduated from Cal Poly San Luis Obispo with a master's degree in public policy and currently resides in San Luis Obispo. His personal interests are in landscape photography and volunteering in the community. Won't you please help me welcome Justin Finch?
Justin, do you have a few words to say to the community?
Sure.
Obviously, we thought your position was important, so I thought you'd take advantage of the opportunity to address the community.
So I'll be doing a new program. It's called Waterwise House Call, and basically it's going to be about a 60 to 90 minute appointment with me and a resident in our water service area. And I'll basically be going through their home with them, showing them ways that they can save water inside the home and in their landscaping. One of the most beneficial parts of the survey is going through the landscape. A lot of folks find that to be really tricky. So I've been doing that for a lot of years, and it's one of my favorite parts of the survey is going through landscape, go through the irrigation system, see what kind of plants you have, how much they need to be watered, and doing your timer appropriately. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you. With that, then, I better get my glasses so I can read. With that, then, we have a presentation on the tsunami preparedness by Battalion Chief Phil Venaris.
Mr. President, members of the board, members of the public, I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to you tonight about the San Luis Obispo County Tsunami Plan. If you remember, several months ago, I gave a very short talk on the impending draft plan that was coming out, and this is a little bit more formal update on what's happening, and there are some maps in the back of the room if you get a chance to take a peek at prior to the end of the meeting. Before I start out, I have a quick little disclaimer here that emerging tsunamis, six of which were destructive, the most destructive that everyone tends to remember is the Crescent City tsunami that was caused by a earthquake that occurred in Alaska in 1964 and took out downtown in the harbor area of Crescent City. The Indonesian tsunami increased awareness in emergency responders and the general public. We had a tsunami plan in San Luis County for quite a while. It was last updated in San Luis County by the Office of Emergency Services in December of 2006. And then the Chilean earthquake caused a tsunami that actually did affect San Luis Obispo County. We were put into an awareness. The Morro Bay filled and emptied about five or six times in a period of about 2 hours. And it raised and dropped about a foot and a half, so it wasn't much, but there was an effect. And so we're trying to be prepared, we're trying to be proactive without causing an undue alarm. So what is a tsunami? Well, there's a couple different types. It can be a local wave caused by an earthquake or an undersea landslide. If you know your history, something off the one of the Channel Islands in the mid-1800s, early 1800s, caused a tsunami that affected Santa Barbara, took a trade ship and ran it up Refugio Creek and did some damage in the Santa Barbara area. That was a local tsunami. It could be caused by an earthquake across the Pacific Ocean, very similar to what happened to Crescent City in 1964. And it's what we consider in emergency services a low-frequency, high-risk event. That means it doesn't occur very often, but if it does occur, the consequences can be very great. So we do try and plan for it. So what is the threat here in San Luis Obispo County? Planners expect that if we do have an issue, it'll be a run-up wave of about 20 foot. But the San Luis Obispo County plan that was prepared by OES prepares for a 50-foot or worst-case wave. Now, I'm not talking about a 50-foot tall wave or a 20-foot tall wave. What we're talking about is a 20-foot rise, a temporary rise in the elevation of the ocean. It's going to come up to about a 20-foot contour level through a series of waves and back out and come back in probably. It's not a 50-foot wave, but it's a rise in the ocean level. Areas along the San Luis Obispo coast within this 20 or 50 foot area actually are called the tsunami plan evacuation areas, and you'll see these in some slides further on as well as the maps behind us. So again, we're trying to plan for the worst case, but we don't expect that here in San Luis Obispo. It's a contained body of water. It's like shaking a glass of water. It's just running back and forth in a much quicker fashion. All right. So how is the siege going to affect us here in Los Osos and in Morro Bay? Well, they're similar to tsunamis, but they're in confined bodies of water. And per the San Luis County Tsunami Response Plan, the extent of a potential siege run-up within Morro Bay is unknown, but it's thought to be less in magnitude than the effects of a tsunami. That's a very, very bureaucratic phrase right there. This plan that we put together through the county OES was referenced through various state agencies and the USGS, and it's based on the best science. So they don't expect a huge issue with sieges, although we do need to speak about it. So the meat of this is, what will emergency responders do in San Luis County? And when I talk about this, I'm not talking about CAL FIRE or San Luis County Fire, but all of the emergency responders, because it's a unified event. What are we going to do? Well, we're going to receive some notifications. It'll come from the Tsunami Warning Center to the Cal EMA California Warning Center in Sacramento. There they ship it out through microwave and through radio and through telephone to the Sheriff's Watch Commander here in San Luis. They'll notify our command center, and there's verification processes through that. So we'll get it fairly quickly. There's different types of notifications that will come down from the Warning Center. Information bulletins are issued for earthquakes 6.5 or less that are not likely to trigger a tsunami advisory, which is for 6.5 or more, but will probably not affect the San Luis coast locally. And during the Chilean earthquake, San Luis County was put into an advisory. And as I said earlier, we did have some waves, but it didn't affect us, so that was appropriate. Watch is issued after an earthquake close enough to cause a tsunami but not cause significant impacts, and a warning is issued after a major earthquake close enough to cause a tsunami and cause imminent significant impact. If you look at those are very familiar terms to us. It's the same terms that they use for floods, for wind events, for rainstorms. It's that advisory, watch, and warning. So it's how they the definitions and how they use it for tsunamis. So what are some of the potential hazards of a tsunami on the Central Coast and here in Los Osos? Well, if it's a short-term event or a short event or a local event, there's some evacuation issues similar to what we saw in Indonesia a couple years ago, with the resulting mass casualty of lots of injuries. Building collapse and infrastructure damage, not just to homes, but the infrastructure, roads, power sirens, they'll sound and the emergency alert system will be activated. We have coming online now a reverse 911 system. You'll hear more about that later. But the reverse 911 system has the ability to contact the general population through cell phones, through pagers, through home phones, and do 10,000 or more at a time, and just mass produce that information in mass production. That doesn't sound very good, does it? You know what I'm trying to say, I hope. will recall, they'll activate the Emergency Operations Center. We will recall personnel as necessary, initiate or start a Red Cross disaster action team, or at least get that going, provide special needs population lists to the emergency responders to assist the elderly and the people who are incapacitated and cannot drive themselves, alert the special hospitals, SCIF, skilled care nursing homes, and stuff within the inundation areas. If the sheriff's department will effect an evacuation or a call for an evacuation, we will assist them, monitor ocean levels, and secure critical infrastructure. A couple of things we want to talk about with the plan. If you're in a tsunami evacuation area and there's a tsunami coming or a large earthquake, what you'll do is you'll put out a message, and that message will very basically be move to high ground. And we talked about this earlier. Move to high ground is the best thing you can do for a tsunami. I mean, if it's a plan need, that'll come over the radio, that'll come over the reverse 911. If you're sitting at home and something happens, move to high ground. The evacuation is the responsibility of the San Luis Sheriff's Department here in Los Osos, and so they will be in charge of determining whether evacuation is needed or not, assisted by the various emergency services in and around Los Osos. We will provide temporary shelter for the evacuees through the Red Cross, and we'll let you know where to go and how to, you know, once those are set up, if it's a long-term event. Law enforcement will secure the evacuated area to make sure that there's no looting issues, and when it's safe to do so, we'll return the evacuees. If you're sitting at home, you don't get a reverse 911 call, all the sirens are sounded, and you don't know what to do, turn to the local radio. If you live within a tsunami evacuation area, and again, I'll show you those in a second in Los Osos, move to what we call a temporary refuge area. In other words, if the water's receding, if you think that it's coming, get to high ground. Go to the second neighbors. It's, you know, make sure that everyone's got the word that they're moving as well. The message that San Luis County OES is going to send out, the Office of Emergency Services, is move to high ground. I said that a couple times. So here in Los Osos, some of the escape routes that they're pre-planning is Santa Isabel Road, Pedro Valley or Pedro Road, Pine Avenue, and Ramona. So I think I have some maps here for you. This is, make sure I can do this, Santa Isabel right here. So there's a little address right here. That's the only address that they predict to be affected by a tsunami in this area. But that red area is the inundation zone, and these yellow lines are the planning areas. So in this case, if they issued an evacuation order, San Luis County Sheriffs would come to this home and say, hey, you guys need to evacuate. As we move further down the coast, First Street, Second Street, Santa Isabel, a couple issues down here in this area. This is the front country there where the pier is, and around the corner, some areas that will have to be moved and evacuated. Coming around towards Mitchell, quite a few homes in that area. That's probably the district's biggest area of issues, homes in the inundation area. Again, these maps are at the back of the room if you'd like to look at them more closely to get some of those addresses. But if you notice, each one of these has an address. It'll be very easy for the San Luis County Sheriffs to come down if, in fact, they do need to evacuate this area. Coming back around towards the Monarch area, a couple homes in there, you can see the golf course for reference. All right, so once the tsunami has occurred, we deem it safe to come back. How are we going to get people back in? Well, we want to re-enter and rehabilitate the area as quickly as possible to get folks back into their homes. So building and health inspectors may be necessary to take a peek at the area before it's reoccupied. We want to make sure all the hazards are mitigated, the utilities are up and running, the roads are good, there's no spills, there's no debris, there's no issues with the infrastructure. We'll use public information officers to keep the evacuees informed as much as possible, and we'll get you back in there as soon as we can. Can I answer any questions or anything for you? Yes, sir.
Are there any instances where there wouldn't be a real potential hazard to homes, but maybe people recreating along the coastline that would be taken off guard by a sudden surge?
And do they have the ability to activate just certain sirens, or do they all go off at once?
The sirens that we're talking about here are the sirens that have been set up for the Diablo Canyon Power Plant Protection Plan, and so those can be activated entirely or singly, piece by piece, or location by location.
Any other questions? Thank you, Phil. I thought that was a great presentation.
Thank you.
And if people have additional questions, they can contact
absolutely
the fire department. Okay, with that, then, we'll move to administrative committee reports. I guess we're starting with the fire report since Phil's already up there.
Okay, thank you very much. You have before you the September 2010 Chief's Report or Fire Manager's Report for Station 15 South Bay. During the month of September, we responded to 104 calls. Statistically, this is a very average month for us, although we are on track to be one of the busier years this for the station. Of those 104 calls, 57 are medical aids, 30 requiring advanced life support from the paramedics, and we had a total of four reported as fires. Company 15 came back a total of 12 times to assist the CAL FIRE staff up at the station. We hired a young firefighter, a reserve firefighter, in the month. We had a couple of folks resign to take employment at other locations. So right now we're currently at about 23 firefighters out of a total of 25. We are also accepting applications for the position of reserve firefighter right now for the upcoming spring academy. So if there's people out there that are interested in becoming a reserve firefighter, part-time employee for the district, you're more than welcome to submit an application. We're looking forward to that. For special projects, CAL FIRE staff, the Los Osos Focus Group, and met with the Fish and Wildlife Service. We've been talking about implementing some hazard abatement programs here in Los Osos for quite a while. While we've been making steady progress, it has not been as quickly as I would like. And so we met with them to try and resolve some issues and see how we could progress on that. That was a very good meeting. We received information as to where we can put folks on the ground, hopefully within by this spring, and where we need to do a continued environmental evaluation. And we came up with a place to get consultation directly with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And so just know we do not regulate that. We highly encourage it. We look for as much addressing as possible, like we indicated last at the last presentation. If your house is offset from the street, you need to have addressing on the street as well as at the house. But we don't regulate the curb addressing. It's just something that's nice to have, but it can be blocked by trash cans. It can be blocked by cars. So we'd rather have it up on the mailbox or in signage than on the curb. Is there anything else I can answer for you?
Nope. Looks like you're off the hook for a while. I would like to, though, I know that you guys are too humble to do this, but I would like to acknowledge that there is a letter in the package here from Jen, thanking the fire department and particularly the battalion chief for the efforts and basically rescuing her and her horse after an accident. So I think that, you know, you get our thanks and congratulations for your guys' effort in that regard. So
thank you.
I don't want your efforts to go unnoticed. So with that, then, we'll move to the utilities report.
Yes, thank you, President Ohelski. In utilities for September of 2010, the staff has submitted the monthly compliance report to the Department of Public Health with no problems or violations reported. Total groundwater production for the month of September was just over 21 million gallons, which is 10% less than this same time last year. Approximately 57% of the district's water service area was billed for around 26 million gallons, generating a revenue of $177,362. Although there was a decrease in the amount of water consumed, there was not an appreciable difference in the revenue generated, and strictly a dollar amount. In addition to their regular duties, staff completed the sampling for the triannual lead and copper program by the Department of Public Health. Staff has also begun preparations for the upcoming winter season by clearing weeds and brush and aerating the soil of the district's drainage basins. Residents can help the district reduce the risk of flooding by sweeping up pine needles, leaves, and other debris that could otherwise get washed into our drainage pump stations and reduce their ability to pump out the stormwater. That's all I have for the utilities report. Is there any questions I can answer?
Any question from the board members? Okay, seeing none, then we'll move to the District Administrative Department report.
Very well. In the Administrative Department, Sandy Woods, the district's administrative supervisor, attended an educational forum on CalPERS. As you probably already know, there's landscape photography skills to help keep the websites look fresh and interesting. That's what I have for administration. Is there any questions I can answer?
Any questions of the Administrative Department report? Seeing none, we'll move to the District General Manager report.
All right. Thank you, President Ohilski. On October 6th, I attended the regular meeting of the Water Resources Advisory Committee. The meeting included a presentation by renowned PG&E meteorologist John Lindsay. While our weather has seemed a bit peculiar lately, John assures us that we're in for a fairly typical rainy season. In addition, the RAC received an update on the Nacimiento Water Project. Despite a couple of challenges, the project is considered to be around 97% complete and is expected to begin making deliveries to the end of the pipeline within the next couple of months. I participated in two votes of the RAC. In addition to approving the minutes from the previous meeting, the committee considered a report entitled California Invasive Species Advisory Committee's Draft Strategic Framework. The need for this report is being driven primarily by concerns surrounding the quagga mussel. The quaggas are a freshwater species of bivalve mollusk, which are native to the Ukraine, but they've been spread throughout the world in the ballast tanks of large ships, part of the shipping industry. They've had a significant negative economic impact in the Great Lakes region, as well as other areas, by infesting pipelines, pumps, and other facilities. Once established, they're virtually impossible to get rid of and end up being another line item in the associated budget for management of the pesky critters. After presentation and discussion, I voted in favor of the Board of Supervisors sending a letter of support for this program, and the motion passed unanimously. With respect to drainage issues, on October 26th, the district received a letter from the county expressing their interest in working with us to resolve drainage issues in Los Osos in conjunction with the roadway repairs expected after the sewer gets installed. As you may be aware, the county has been deferring maintenance on the roads in expectation of the sewer project, and the accumulated funds are expected to go much further when coupled with the roadway repair responsibilities of the project itself. Various drainage issues have been studied at different times over the past decade or so. There's some good information on the problems and recommended solutions. The sewer project presents several opportunities to improve on the drainage situation, utilizing residential leach fields to percolate roof runoff, and implementing a new standard for roadside swales are two key components with LID benefits, two key components of a comprehensive approach in addressing drainage problems in Los Osos. And whether the damage was covered under our insurance policy, the replacement costs were indeed covered, and the insurance company promptly sent the district a check for those costs. With regard to the South Bay well, we've been reporting on that quite a bit recently. Fluid Resource Management has completed their work at the South Bay well site. They removed some old unused electrical components, straightened out the remaining equipment, and installed some new stuff. My written report indicates that the lower aquifer well was expected to be back online at any time. I'm happy to report that that time is here. South Bay is now producing water again. And as I have reported previously, we'll monitor the nitrate levels coming from that well in the hope that the nitrate level will decrease to the point where the water will be of sufficient quality to allow for blending with the upper aquifer water. A couple other items here with regard to leak detection. At the last board meeting, there was a question that was asked regarding the leak detection capabilities of the Golden State Water Company. I contacted that agency and learned that they do indeed have a program that rotates around their various service areas on about a 5-year interval. The equipment used belongs to Golden State and connects to fire hydrants, where the equipment listens for the whisper of a mainline leak. According to representatives of Golden State, they've discovered and repaired a couple of small leaks over the years. The equipment's fairly expensive, and Golden State may be willing to let the district borrow or rent it if we had a concern. Generally, it's an expensive endeavor if you don't have access to the equipment, and it's usually only employed when there is some reason or cause for concern. Usually those concerns come from a comparison of the amount of water measured during production and compared against the amount of water measured by the customer meters. The district's water facilities fall well within acceptable tolerances for system losses, which can also include water for flushing, firefighting, and other unmetered uses. Out of curiosity, I contacted the city of San Luis Obispo, and I found out that they don't have any such equipment in their system or in their bag of tricks. Another question asked at the last meeting was in regards to a charge by the district's website designer. It was confirmed that the charges were additional assistance in designing web pages and furthering our own in-house knowledge and abilities, which were not included in the original scope for that vendor under their contract. So that's what I have for the general manager's report. Happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions? Just the informational item. I have been in discussions with...
Thank you. Would anybody from the county public works department be at that meeting?
That's our goal. That's our goal, is if we set up a joint meeting with LOCAC, they do have a person for public works representing the county at every one of their meetings. So that would be the goal, that we would have people there from the county. So that, again, Vicki and I just spoke about that last week when we got the letter. So we're hoping to finalize that. And I think the response date is sometime in March, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, so we have time to get that done. Okay, seeing no other questions, then we'll move to committee reports, and we'll start with emergency services.
We had no committee meeting this last month, so there's no report. We will have a meeting on Monday the 15th at the fire station at 5:30.
Thank you. Short and to the point. Financial advisory.
I'm sorry, can we clarify the date of the emergency services meeting?
It should be, it's the third Monday. Am I Tuesday? Okay. I'm stand corrected. Tuesday the 16th at 5:30.
Thank you for the finance. Thank you for the still short report.
Question on, yes. On that. Director Sparks, did the emergency services... Did emergency services committee review the changes in the...
Oh, thank you, Vice President Senate. Yeah, we at our prior meeting we had the draft. We had the code, and so the committee reviewed it and provided comments at that meeting. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. So with that, we'll move to the Finance Advisory Committee, and Vice President Senate served as the chair for those committees.
I presented the meetings of October 4th. And covered that in September 27th at the last meetings, and we had one subsequent meeting on November 1st where we reviewed the financials. It's a continued ongoing review of the financials and warrant reports, and as always, these discussions, also including the public comment, revealed quite a few things that we work on to better our controls and understandings about the expenditures that we make. Our next meeting, it was previously set for November 29th. It's been moved to November 30th. And
last month, I also, before you get back, Steve, I have appointed an ad hoc committee as president to work with AMPI to come up with the revised policies and procedures for our financial operations. So that committee has been charged to come back with a proposed revisions to our financial policies and procedures sometime by the end of next March. So that ad hoc committee was appointed, and that's Lisa Gonzalez and
Sandra Knapp.
Sandra Knapp, thank you. Was that what you, yeah, Sandra? Right. Were you gonna? Was that what you were gonna say, Steve? Okay. Thank you. With that, any questions, financial advisors? Okay. Seeing none, then we'll move to utility advisory.
Thank you, President Ohilski. The Utilities Advisory Committee met, and we had a introduction and presentation from Justin Finch. He talked about some of the handouts and sort of how the program was going to kind of unveil itself within the community. Took a lot of questions, answers, and had a good discussion. We also discussed the 8th Street situation, and I'm happy to hear that the insurance covered it. We also discussed the 10th Street tank, which I thought was maybe going to be on our agenda tonight. We had a pretty extensive discussion about it regarding some of the corrosion issues that our 10th Street tank has, and they're actually kind of potentially serious. So some of the discussion was around the fact that we needed to possibly reprioritize with the water master planning, and I'm not sure, Dan, if you can, how about responds after I comment, and then you can tell me if I'm, how, reprioritize in master planning because we weren't sure where that was within the water master plan of that repair and or replacement of that tank. We also discussed the contacting Golden State to ask them what their emergency, if we had a situation where we had to drain that tank, how long it would take, and whether Golden State would be able to have adequate supply to wheel water if that was necessary. We also discussed the drainage time of the tank and what that would look like and what the impacts might be. And then we asked staff after direction from the board or when this comes back to the board to since our reserves really aren't funded, we don't have adequate, even our emergency repair reserves aren't adequately funded, contact the iBank again and see what our status is and our relationship is with them.
All AWWA procedures for disinfection and sanitation, but we did get a very substantial report on the condition of that tank. It's had some deferred maintenance because the water master plan does include eventual replacement of that tank with a tank up off of Highland at near the intersection with Alexander. That tank is, or that project rather, would require some extensive piping and would carry a very hefty price tag. So one of the things we've been evaluating with the district engineer is the trade-offs, the opportunities to do something, to do some rehabilitation work now and buy us a little more time to get us to a point where we can do that, the ultimate project. The location of the current tank is adequate for its purposes now. The tank is about 11 feet below the elevation that it should be at. The site at on Highland and Alexander is at an ideal elevation so that that tank would fully function by gravity and wouldn't need any kind of a pump whatsoever. As far as the potential for the tank to fail, it's got some substantial corrosion issues going on. It's substandard in the sense that it doesn't have seismic restraints. The mode of failure might be dependent on what causes it. If it's a corrosion issue, it, you know, will probably slowly start to leak more and more. And those kind of temporary repairs can be made to help kind of prevent that from happening. But in the event there was an earthquake, it could potentially fail catastrophically, which is our worst case scenario. So like I said, we're looking at a couple things. We're looking at different levels of repair. Do we just fix the corrosion? Do we fix the corrosion and put a foundation under it with seismic constraints? Or do we try to bite the bullet and go for the bigger project that's going to be much more expensive? Currently, so that decision may be affected by our relative success in finding grant funding. Or opportunities for grant funding. Typically, the money that's being let these days are for projects that are ready to go, already fully vetted and designed and ready to be built. I don't know that we're there yet for the Highland solution, but I do think because some of the issues with the 10th Street tank have been known for some time, I think we're in a real good position to get something, a grant sort of package for a repair project together fairly quickly. We have staff that's been attending some training for applying for grants, and we're looking to maximize every effort in that area. As far as Golden State helping out in the event that we do have the intertie project that's included in the ISJ would certainly enhance their ability to help us out in a situation like that, or vice versa, help our ability to help them out if they should be in a similar situation. I hope that answers all your questions.
So the long and the short of it is this may be coming back, or at least we know that it's on the radar and it's being dealt with. So thank you, Dan. I appreciate that. And that's it for now.
Any questions? Okay, seeing none. Directors, report of attendance at other agency committee meetings. Do we have any? Seeing none, then we'll move to the LOCAC report. Oh, Vicki, you've changed. No.
Thank you, President Ohilski, Fred Delegato, Vice Chair Locac. I was asked by Vicki Millage to come give the report at this meeting. We will not have a meeting in November, so our next meeting is December 16th. At that meeting, there will be a sheriff's report. We can ask the sheriff's questions. We'll have county staff reports, which are now mostly Mr. Gibson, question and answer. And then we have a CSD report. At this last meeting, we also had a green building ordinance presentation by Ryan Hostetter. And then on the day the Giants won the World Series, I was up at a green build meeting up in Paso Robles. And I was with Vicki Millage and Carolyn Atkinson and myself. And basically, this was the fifth meeting of five. They're just in the very beginning of their process. And what they've been doing is taking public input, no judgment of it, just getting everybody's ideas written down. And then it was kind of interesting. They gave us, this is the process they've done at every one of the meetings, they gave us six green dots and one red dot. And you could put the six green dots on any one of the items. They were up on sheets of paper that you supported, and the one red dot if there was something that you opposed. And people complained that there weren't enough red dots. But as it turned out, I threw my red dot in the garbage because I couldn't find anything to oppose. So anyway, a lot of good ideas at that meeting. At the last meeting, we also discuss the vacation rental ordinance, and we decided to try to keep working at it with the county and try to make it stronger. There we looked at a proposed 11,500 square foot home up on Seahorse Lane on 5 acres, and the council in a mixed Ryman Chapman presented it, and basically, these fees are going to come from road improvement fees from new development. And since there is no development and the fund's very short, don't expect any new projects till 2012 or later. Probably after the sewer. I believe that you brought up the drainage at Ravenna and Los Osos Valley Road. The next land use committee is going to look at that, and that should be held next Thursday at 6:30 at the Los Osos Community Church on 11th Street between El Moro and Paso Robles Street. We're trying to get some sidewalk areas filled in on Los Osos Valley Road between Celia's restaurant and Sage Nursery and Vaughn's. It's just a short-term fix because we don't have money for the long-term fix, which would be development fees. Let's see here. One other thing here regarding drainage too. Lynette Ternotsky came to the transportation and circulation meeting and brought up the drainage. She referred to the Wallace Group 2005 report showing drainage areas in trouble, and she would like the CSD, county, and LOCAC to work together to solve the drainage problems. So, are there any questions?
Any questions? I would like to, as the president, apologize for not having a CSD presentation at your last meeting, but as your chair knows, I was at the Giants game in San Francisco that day, so unfortunately I was unable to make it.
Well, we're glad you were there and rooting them on.
Okay, with that, we'll move to the consent agenda. Does anybody want to pull an item before we go to public comment?
I just have a brief comment. I don't want to pull the item, just particularly in looking at it, and with the mild summer, the water revenues are something that projected out are something we're going to have to monitor because they are on the short side of what we projected.
So nobody wants to pull any items off the consent calendar? Okay, seeing that, then we'll move to, pardon me, public comments on the administrative report, the committee report, and the consent calendar items.
I was at the utilities meeting, and I listened to the discussion about the 10th Street water tank, and the discussion went something like this, $400,000 to repair it, $2 million for a new larger tank up on Highland.
At Los Osos, I too participated in the RAC yesterday. One of the things that came out of the Santa Margarita report, this sounds a little off base, but it's not. because they have a water tank problem there in Santa Margarita. And they went to the USDA and obtained funding for that water tank. It would seem to me that since we're in a situation financially that we could use some grant funding of any kind, that it might be advisable to investigate the availability of funds from the USDA. They apparently have infrastructure monies available, and we definitely need infrastructure repair, and the tank is a prime example of repair that we need. Therefore, please ask staff to research and investigate the possibilities of obtaining funding from the USDA for the replacement of the water tank. Thank you.
Thank you.
Frank Celia Los Celsos. First, I'd like to comment on the LOCAC. That 11, I think it's 11,000 square foot house that was approved. I think it had 7 bathrooms. So it's quite a big house and a lot of water use probably there. The other thing is that you talked about the transportation. The county came over and talked about the transportation issues in Los Celsos. And what they did there is they showed a chart, their 5-year plan. And they based that on a 28,000 population. So someday we'll figure out how much, you know, what is going to be the population of Los Celsos for effective planning. The other issue about the water tank on 10th Street, you know, did you look at the issue regarding, we have a sheriff's substation right across the street from that. We have a communications hub just not too far there on San Isabel, or was it San Inez, and 10th Street. Would that affect any of the communication system with them or the effectiveness of that sheriff department if anything happened? Talking about the general managers now, general manager report talked about the leaks for Golden State, and they had equipment. I go a little further in the question, and I appreciate Dan bringing this up and researching it, but I plan at the PUC, I'm waiting for that route yet all these years that they haven't brought that equipment to Los Celsos. I think it's important because sometimes it's cost efficient for industries to either pollute waterways, the air, it's cheaper to pay fines or just pay the cost, other cost, or just pumping cost than it is actually to fix the leaks. But in the long term, it's going to affect the people of Los Celsos. We have that seawater intrusion problem, and I think it's very important that every effort's made to find and contain those type of situations. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Go ahead, Steve. Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker. I'm first going to comment on what was reported and then some things that weren't reported. The South Bay well, up and running. What is the quality? When are we going to find out what is the quality of the water? It sounds like it's not drinking water quality yet, so where are you pumping it to and how much are you pumping? I've asked that you get a full report and accounting of what you've spent on that well. It was completed in 2008, October of 2008. The work was done, and we are not getting drinking water from that site. I think you need a full report. I'd like to see a full report. What's not in your reports is an update on the firehouse driveway and the drainage system there. You're spending money on it right now. It's happening right now, and you're not hearing about it. There's no report on the ISJ. We're ticking away to the end of the year. We're all not really holding our breath for the reports out of the ISJ. And then this talk about the tank. Yes, we've all known, if you read the old water master plan, that the tank was slated for demolition and the new tank established at Highland. But it does raise the question, Wallace was hired to update your water master plan, I think many months ago. I think it was June or maybe even May. When are you going to get that report back? That's why I mention it here. Your properties cannot be developed. Your bankruptcy, whatever you call those now, creditors don't want the properties because they're not developable. I just wanted to go to the definition of underdeveloped properties. Those of us, those of you in the community who have been waiting to add a bedroom or a bathroom will not be allowed to do so under the conditions of this wastewater project the way it is. Condition number 5 of the coastal development permit pretty much spells it out. The community is in a conundrum.
Thank you. Any other speakers? We'll have Richard, and then we'll close public comment.
Richard Margetson, since Julie talked briefly about the rates and charges, I just want to clarify. Somebody asked me a question after I made my public comment. The reason what I was talking about is important is when one category is not being properly allocated their fair share of O&M costs, the other three categories in the ordinance, residential, multifamily, and mobile homes, are picking up the brunt of that. The 27 cents, the person who asked me the question was unclear, that would be a reduction in the volume charge. Per unit, from now till whenever it's adjusted, times the number of units that are used in this community. And that's not, that's just an example I was using. I actually think it's much more than 27 cents per unit. But anyway, I hope that got clarified. I want to talk a minute about, you know, Mr. Gibson's taken a lot of shots at this water district about conservation. Again, we're seeing, I don't know if it's because of the new rate structure or because of water conservation education programs out there or water audits or whatever, but we're down year over year from last year. We're down 7 million gallons for the first 4 months. Revenue's up 3%. You know, we may be at one of those economic demand supply equations where we might not be able to pull a whole lot more revenue out of this district. I'd like to know, because we don't have that information, if Golden State is showing the same numbers. And then my last comment, and we haven't even got to the toilet retrofit that's required as part of the project, but that's a whole other subject. And just my last comment, in case she comes up to the microphone again tonight, today's Lindy Owen's birthday.
Okay. We'll close public comment. I just have a couple quick answers, and then maybe you can answer. Regarding funding for the 10th Street, our district engineer and staff is looking into potential grants fundings as well as loan funding, so they're already on top of that. So.
Including the USDA.
Including the USDA. I think the South Bay well question that's been asked, that may be something that we'd like to have a more detailed report given to the Utility Advisory Committee and then vetted and then brought forward to us, because it has been almost 2 years or a little over 2 years. Do you have a report on the fire station
I can report that the project is underway. The slab itself has been poured. The sump that will contain the wash water when they do vehicle washing behind the station, that sump is installed, and the drain line was repaired before the construction of the slab even started. So there will be a little bit of a delay while the concrete slab cures before they bring in the trucks and begin repaving the driveway. The reason we need to wait for the slab to cure to a certain point is because access to the fuel station behind the fire station will have to be through the trucks, and the engines will have to go through the bays actually to get to the fuel dock. While the driveway is being repaired, it won't be usable.
I think, and also, John, the ISJ Water Master Plan, that's still on schedule for the end of the year, correct?
Yes.
Thank you. And do we have an update on our district water master plan? That question was asked also.
Yeah, in fact, we had a meeting this morning with two members from the district engineers, and basically it was the water master plan is at this point kind of a work in progress as we continue to gain additional information, particularly with respect to our own financial situation and the possibility and availability of some grant funding to do certain things. A lot of the projects that we're considering or that we're have identified as being
depend on Joe for this motion.
I'll make a motion to receive the administrative and committee reports and approve consent items A, B, C, and D.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Any objection to your unanimous roll call? Seeing none, we'll have a unanimous vote. With that, then, we'll move to the general action items. We have three general action items. The first one is, the first one is to amend Title IV of the Los Osos Community Service District Fire Code Ordinance by adopting the 2010 edition of the California Fire Code, including annual supplements, state and local amendments. I'll turn it over to Battalion Chief Phil again.
Mr. President, members of the board, and members of the public, once again, I appreciate the opportunity. You have before you a staff report to requesting to amend Title IV of the Los Osos Fire Code. Every 3 years, we need to update the code. The vast majority of fire organizations in California and throughout the country do this. It's time to go again. I also have with me Fire Marshal and Battalion Chief Paul Lee, who is the Fire Marshal for the district as well as the San Luis County, and so I'll let him continue with this.
Good evening, President, Board. Paul Lee, your Fire Marshal. This evening, we're bringing to you with recommendations the California Fire Code and local amendments. This necessarily won't reduce the number of incidents that we see in the district, but what it helps to do is dramatically change our success rate when responding to these calls and reduce the significance of these incidents that we respond to. As Chief Venera said, we do this every 3 years. What we're looking for tonight is to set a hearing date, give you an introduction, an overview of what we're looking at, and then finally to approve a summary in the newspaper for public notice. It's being a little more fiscally responsible doing a summary. The base code for the California Fire Code is the International Fire Code. We are allowed to make amendments to the California Fire Code. That's what we adopt. Jumping right into it, we'll quickly go over what we've done in the past. We have made little to no changes in what I put up here on the board for you. Road and driveway access standards have stayed the same. I'll talk a little bit more about that as we come through of that particular amendment. On-site water storage, we had a foot change from 250 feet to a hydrant to 300. It coincides with the actual buildup of the hydrant system in this community. We've also had a change with the residential fire sprinkler requirements amended to reflect the California Fire Code. I want to be real clear here that this is not an amendment. This is a change in code. And I'll kind of highlight it here for you. For residential structures only is what we're about to talk about in new residential structure buildings. And what it has basically said is that we will be having a zero-based requirement through code that takes place January 1st. What that means is if you build a new residential structure, you will need to sprinkler it. In the past, the California Fire Code has required 5,000 square feet. The last code adoption, which was 3 years ago, this board decided because of safety concerns that we need to bring that down to 1,000 square feet, which you did. The state has now superseded that and has taken that from 5,000 to zero. What have we maintained? We have maintained that if you have an existing structure as an amendment, you may still add on to that 1,000 square feet or 50% of your square footage plot plan for the structure itself. That will not change. We'd like to keep that amendment. We are also keeping the amendment that all new commercial buildings, 1,000 square feet or more, will not need to be sprinklered. Why are sprinklers so important? As you can see up here on the screen, we have temperature on the left, minutes on the bottom. Where sprinklers really help us out is we have a setup time. Fire gets detected, the alarm is reported, fire department is responding through a dispatch procedure. Fire department arrives on scene, starts pulling hose, and where we really do our best is when we get water on the fire. That's where we make the difference in somebody who is inside and reduction to property damage and effect to the environment. As you can see, you have a nice red line that shows temperature. Shaded is the flashover area. That's an area where survivability for the victim inside really diminishes instantaneously. We get an area ignition of the room itself. You can see by the time we're starting to push water at 10 minutes that we're well into the range of 1,250 degrees. That's not very survivable for somebody inside. However, if we start bringing fire sprinklers into the equation, you can see the blue, and elaborate more on what we'd like to do. These are supported by the Public Resource Code and by Title 14 of the California Code of Regulations. We've also run this through County Public Works, so we're all on the same page. We're all in agreement. The second one there is address requirements. We have done a survey through firefighters in past code adoptions, and what we found is to make the requirement of having addressing on existing and new structures be a little bit bigger. Past has been 3 to 4 inches. Now we're going up a little bit larger. The survey did show that firefighters do better in locating a residence or structure when the address is bigger in size and is well posted. Moving on, a final amendment that we're looking at this evening is we've added a section regarding corrosion-resistant firehead sprinklers. This is supported by NFPA 13. Basically, what it's doing is when we require sprinklers on the outside of a structure, if it's in an environment that has corrosion, we'd like to see those sprinklers corrosion resistant. It becomes a shame when you do spend the money and after 5 years your sprinkler heads rust out, that sprinkler system is no longer working. Why have them if we're not going to maintain them? Other than that, that's the new amendments. Very light this year than in past cycles every 3 years. We're happy to see this light amendment cycle because of the blending of the California Fire Code into building codes, residential code, and the new green code. We feel that this code system is a little more user-friendly for the applicant. It's a lot safer, and you're seeing less amendments because of this. I'll turn it back over to you for any questions.
Paul, can you go back to that chart with the on the impact of the residential sprinklers one more time?
As you can see here, flashover, this is an area of where survivability during a fire is really not going to work out well. That's at about the 10-minute mark. Not to say that at the 5-minute mark they're going to do much better, but take a look way over here at about the minute to 2-minute mark where we're at 300 degrees. That's when the fire sprinklers come on. Start keeping that fire smaller, not necessarily putting it out, but it buys the person inside time to evacuate or time to wait for the fire department to come in. We always recommend evacuating, but there are instances where people that are convalescing cannot get themselves out.
And can you explain the difference between the residential sprinklers that you've just alluded to, and then the next one, the standard?
Quite a lot, as well as county council, and so this has been reviewed by legal from the district as well.
Excuse me, I was looking at something. We'll receive the report and I'll entertain a motion to. Public comments.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Maybe if I just was to guide you, give a little guidance here. With the new community service district law, we are required to adopt ordinances in the same manner that the county does. And as I go through this procedure, I want everybody to understand I didn't write it. The California legislature did. So the first requirement is that either during the introduction of the ordinance or the adoption of the ordinance, the board has a choice to make. One is to read the entire ordinance into the record, or B, by motion, order the ordinance to be read by title only. So my first recommendation is, by motion and voice vote, order the ordinance to be read by title only. And then after that motion hopefully passes, and I'll tell you the penalties if it doesn't, then you would introduce the ordinance, order the public, order staff to publish it, and set what, December 2nd as the date for adoption. And I just wanted to make, I know Paul addressed this a little bit, but staff is recommending to the board that we publish a summary of the ordinance, which requires two publications of only the summary, which occurs before the final hearing and immediately after the final hearing. That's in lieu of publishing the entire ordinance, and it will be much more cost-effective to follow that procedure. So, Dan, I don't know if you have any comments.
Ken, I'll let you finish this item since you started, but I'll make a motion to have it read by title rather than the entire ordinance.
Okay.
And recommended that we do it by title only rather than reading the entire ordinance.
Okay. May we have a roll call?
President Ohilski?
Aye.
Director Kelly?
Yes.
Director Sparks?
Yes.
Director Cicinha?
Yes.
Vice President Sennett?
Yes.
Okay. This is ordinance number 2010-XXX, an ordinance of the Los Osos Community Service District amending and restating the district's fire prevention code, found in Title IV of the Los Osos Community Service District Codes, including the adoption of the 2010 edition of the California Fire Code, including annual supplements and state amendments and errata.
Thank you, Mr. Seitz. So this will be, where do we post this?
What the next motion that staff would be looking for is a motion to introduce the ordinance in order of publication through the summary procedures.
So moved.
Second.
First and second. May we have a roll call, please?
President Ohilski?
I'm sorry, I'm so used to voting last. Aye.
Director
yes.
Sparks, Director Kelly?
Yes.
Director Cicinha?
Yes.
Vice President Sennett?
Yes. The motion passes. And Mr. Seitz, the next sequence?
There is no other sequence other than just to state that the hearing for adoption will be at the December 2nd regular board meeting.
Okay. We will hear the adoption at our December 2nd board meeting.
Yeah, and Dan just wanted to point out that the second reading, sometimes they call it the hearing on adoption or the second reading. They both accomplish the same thing. They implement the ordinance.
Thank you.
With that, then, we'll move back to, we'll move on to item 6B, which is...
President, I want to thank Paul, Rob for coming, and Phil for your presentation tonight. Thank you.
And I'd like to especially express our appreciation for all their work and they've done for the community, not just on this, but in general. And I was thinking...
We counted several hundred kids. I don't have the exact numbers with me, but I believe we're somewhere in the neighborhood of 450 kids went through the park. I really appreciate Vaughn's Shopping Center for once again opening up the parking lot for us. Had a good attendance from allied responders, state parks. Brought a couple rangers in with a great presentation on small animals, as well as San Luis Ambulance and the Sheriff's Department brought in their Viper, their Dare car, and some folks in there as well. So it was a great day.
The reason I just wanted to thank you again for that event for the community's benefit, because I know a lot of the school kids had a really awesome time there. So, again, thank you.
Thank you.
So we'll move to item 6B, which is the leak adjustment issue, or pardon me, two leak adjustment credit requests. And Dan, could you give the report, please?
Thank you, President Ohilski. This action item involves the district's leak adjustment policies. Current policies allow the general manager to approve a credit of up to 50% of the amount of a high bill that is in excess of an average bill for a district water customer. The policy requires that the leak be related to a physical break or beyond the control of the customer, as opposed to a behavioral failure on the part of the customer. The policy also requires that the customer provide evidence that the leak was repaired and that the customer has not received a leak adjustment in the past 12 months. District code is very clear that all water facilities on the customer side of the water meter are the responsibility of that customer. With that background, I'd like to briefly review two specific cases. On August 19, 2010, the district received a request for a leak adjustment. After receiving a high water bill, the tenant contacted a local plumber who came out to the residence and repaired a leaking toilet. After receiving a subsequent bill that was even higher, the plumber was called out again, and it was determined that there was a break in the yard piping that was to blame for the leak, and that leak was promptly repaired. Even though the tenant was diligent in this case in locating and repairing the leak, the district's current policies only allow one leak adjustment in a 12-month period, and this tenant had applied for and received a leak adjustment on the first leaky toilet episode. The second case I want to go over briefly involves a substantial leak that went undetected for some time due to the sandy soils and winter rains. As a result, the tenant received a water bill that was over $6,000. I'm just going to use round numbers since we're kind of talking hypotheticals at this time. A leak adjustment credit was approved, but the tenant was still faced with a water bill that was over $3,000. Applicable district code is clear that in addition, the total cost to produce and deliver water includes the variable costs, or those costs that would only be incurred when water is actually pumped and delivered to a customer's water meter. In other words, if there were never any customer leaks, the district's water rate structure would recover all of those costs. We don't depend on the revenue from leaks in order to operate the water systems, the short story there. Nevertheless, leaked water clearly carries some variable costs associated with it as a result of the electricity to pump the water out of the ground, some minimal chemicals for treatment, and residual disinfection. I was able to determine that the variable costs are small when compared to the fixed costs, and those variable costs are about 30 cents per unit. Due to the extremely high cost of the leaked water in this case and the relatively low cost of the water that actually leaked, it was determined that some additional reduction in the amount of that water bill might be warranted. Now, since the district code currently does not provide for any additional consideration, it would require that the district code be amended in order to provide additional relief. So deviating a little bit from the recommendation in the staff report, the first question that needs to be answered by the board is whether there's any interest at all in amending the current district code in order to allow additional consideration in cases like these. If there is no support for amending this section of the district code, then there's no reason to consider this item further. If there is support, however, for an amendment to allow additional flexibility, then we'll move into a discussion of the various options and input received from the Utility Advisory Committee on how to address these extreme cases.
Thank you. So if I understand, staff's making a oral change to the staff report and saying hurdle that we need to discuss is whether or not we want to address the current policy.
Right.
Okay. And as everybody on the board will remember, we did have this issue come up a while ago, and basically we made the guy whole not through adjusting his bill, but actually donations and contributions to him. So I guess the question is, and we need to have some discussion on and questions to Dan, do we want to look at adjusting our existing policy? As Dan said, if we don't want to, then the rest of this discussion's moot. So we have two actual cases here to set the background for that discussion. So let's take two separate, we'll discuss this first. Do we have public comment? and then bring an ordinance forward to the board for adoption, and then these two particular leaks would be covered by whatever policy we adopt.
Actually, the Utility Advisory Committee, and I think I believe we also broached the subject with the Finance Advisory Committee. I'm not absolutely sure about that.
But I think the first step we have to decide is whether we want to adjust our policy or not and then give direction to staff. So that's the first item on there.
Now, in the first case, we're just looking at strictly the issue of whether you can issue two adjustments or multiples in a 12-month period.
Yes, and actually my recommendation was to allow it in this case because the tenant was diligent in pursuing the correction of the leak, called immediately upon getting a high bill, got a plumber out there right away, thought they had fixed the leak, and wasn't until they received a subsequent bill that they realized that there was more than just one issue on that property.
And that point, excuse me, that points to the, you know, every case is different, and here you had two leak adjustment issues overlapping each other.
Very different.
Well, I would look at a leaking toilet as being something that is so obvious to the resident that it doesn't deserve any adjustment. However, the fact that there was another leak that was probably more severe, and probably the toilet didn't contribute to an excessive bill. It was probably the other leak.
I would only say, as a somewhat in defense of this tenant, that there are people in the community who maybe aren't as savvy about those kinds of things, and it's great that we have Justin on board and he can do some outreach and help to raise the awareness. Not everybody is going to be able to do that, and when they call, a lot of times people are reluctant to call plumbers. Plumbers are expensive. In this case, the tenant called the plumber right out, and as a professional, the plumber said, okay, we fixed a leak, and this person figured it was done, but it was fixed.
I don't think leaking toilets, although they're their drain, I don't think they're going to lead to an issue with the bill. The person would probably say, well, I can pay a couple extra bucks a month rather than spend the costs on having a plumber come out. So, you know, I think we should, I think disregard the leaking toilet right now and look at the more severe.
When we did go around and around on the policy, and one of the things that we ultimately came to is that we weren't totally, what I felt like the UAC kind of finally came with, that we weren't sure that there was an adequate appeal process, that really the final appeal to the board, as the policy standard stood, we don't have a lot of authority. Am I correct, Dan? Is that what we were talking about? That we didn't have that discretionary ability.
The current code, the way it addresses disputes or appeals, is code section 2.01.20C. It says any customer that disputes a determination by the general manager may seek board of directors review of said determination by paying the established fee and making a written application, blah, blah, blah. It's written in such a way that if I deny a request, they can appeal it. It's
right.
It's not really interpreted as being.
There's not an additional appeal once you've denied it.
If I go as far as I can go, that's the end of their recourse. They can't,
right.
They can't ask for more. In vetting this through the Utility Advisory Committee, I did come up with one approach to dealing with it, and that would be just to add another paragraph right above that one that would dispute a denial on the part of the general manager, and it would read something to the effect that additional relief. When the general manager determines that additional credit is justified as a result of unusual circumstances or undue hardship, he shall bring that item to the board of directors for consideration. The board may grant additional relief beyond that provided for in paragraph B, provided that said relief will not result in additional cost to other water customers of the district. That was something that's very important for me to include in there, because I didn't want it to ever be perceived that anything that we decided or approved by way of leak adjustment could be construed as a subsidy or requiring payment on the part of other customers.
And the UAC did discuss that, and we actually I think there was agreement on that, that the delivery of the water at a minimum needed to be paid for, that we couldn't afford to subsidize regardless of the amount of the leak. There had to be some ability. We just didn't want to authorize the general manager necessarily to approve additional relief. We did think it was important that any extreme hardship, that then he could bring it back to the board. So I agree with the policy change, I guess is what I'm saying.
Okay. And I think that the language that you just read, although...
process established so that it doesn't just happen there and then we can't take action on it, actually produced some sort of amendment that allowed us to take an action as a board.
Okay. I was going to try to move to a motion, but if you have additional comments.
I just had a question. Maybe Mr. Seitz can bring light to it. And that is, if there is a water leak due to, a failure of a residential system, is that something that homeowners insurance would cover? I mean, loss of the water is damaged.
Now you serve as a bankruptcy attorney and insurance attorney.
I don't know the answer to that.
If I read the intent or the consensus of what I see on the board, is I think the board's comfortable giving you direction that we are interested in changing the adopted policy, and that the approach that staff's recommending is something that we would be interested in pursuing. So.
In the idea that we would, go ahead.
And then we'd revisit these two. We'd basically defer these two items until we've revised the policy. I think that's where I see us all going.
Okay. Correct? I'd like to see a little whispered conversation here with district council is whether that direction could be by consensus or a motion, and it was a preference that it be by motion.
Right. Well, I was just trying to make sure that my board was.
And then the other aspect of that is very happy to come back with that change to the district code because of the time it's taken to go through the committees and deal with this issue, do the analysis and vet it through the utility committee. Quite a bit of time has come by on the more pricey of the two leaks. And they're obviously very anxious to know whether the board is supportive of additional relief. That's maybe more of a question that would help bring some comfort or not to that party. Can certainly be deferred and fully vetted.
John had suggested first of all, we're just going to take a motion on whether or not we want to change the policy. And take a vote on that with the direction that you've laid out is appropriate. And then we can move forward from that point. So,
excellent.
Does somebody want to make that motion?
Could we take public comment?
I'll make the motion that we adopt the proposal.
Does anybody have any public comment on that? I'm sorry.
Leak that at this point.
Well, if you as the chair.
It's a policy, though. Is that what you discussed?
Oh, we went around. We had a full circle discussion of this.
We actually looked at seven or eight.
Okay, if at the chair of that committee you're comfortable, I'm not comfortable that the financial advisory does need to see it.
What we came back with was that we thought that there was no room to have a full forgiveness of any leak, that there had to be some cost to the delivery.
Well, I think that's...
So that's where... This is directly from committee discussion. That's... Mm-hmm. We spent several meetings on it.
And part of this came out of that committee meeting where Ron Munns is a new committee member, and also the water conservation and leak adjustment. He's a committee of one for the city of San Luis Obispo in reviewing leak adjustment credits in that jurisdiction. And... the city of San Luis Obispo regulations were very strict, like ours are, and they found at least one situation where they felt that additional relief was appropriate, and they had to change their regulations in order to accomplish that.
We even discussed having like a smaller review board, but we discussed a lot of scenarios, but we felt that a process to come back and appeal to the full board was the best way to do it.
That's fine. I mean,
especially in light of the fact that they're relatively, these types of extreme cases are very, very few and far.
Maybe like five a year at the most, if even.
If even.
Okay, well, then we'll just go with Steve's motion then, which is...
With the review by Financial Advisory Committee?
Yeah.
and then report back to us with any recommendations they may make that would affect your proposal.
Okay.
Yes, Director Sparks.
Is the proposed ordinance change going to include the language variable cost?
Actually, it won't address the method for determining the additional relief.
But it's going to have language calling out variable cost of water?
That was an analysis that I did to get a good understanding of what the cost of the leaked water actually was in order to avoid any kind of a perception of subsidy by other water ratepayers in the district. But because of the tremendous variability in the types of cases that might come before the board, I didn't think it was appropriate. And this was one of the things that we vetted out in the Utility Advisory Committee. Although we looked at six or eight different methods for calculating increased reductions in electricity costs and then minor amounts of chemicals.
I think we need to have an amount actually identified in the...
But I don't know if we have to have an amount. I think we need to say no less than the cost because the cost is going to vary over time.
Okay, that's fine. I see what you're saying. Sorry.
Another thing I think we should also consider is the nature of what is leaking their facilities. If it's an old system and it's prone to further leak, what would be our policy on other appeals for relief if they had the system failed?
Yeah, I think, Steve, though, but what we're basically talking about is giving the board the discretion to basically act as an appeal body. So that's the kind of information that would be brought by staff to the board when they make the determination.
Because as we say right now, you only get one time and one time only, and the process stopped with the general manager, and we're just trying to...
We're trying to give the board the discretion within parameters.
And we may never have this before us ever again. I mean, this may be the one time that it comes before us, but I think we need to be prepared.
I really am of the opinion that the analysis for determining the cost of the leaked water was important. Right. Aside from that, we really kind of overanalyzed it. We tried to find a magic formula that's going to fit every case, and really what we needed is just a means of appealing back to the board of directors.
Well, I think we have direction, and we have a motion to take we have a motion to change the policy in taking your paragraph as direction towards where we want to go.
And
with
I'll second that.
Okay.
When it goes to the Finance Advisory Committee, I just want to keep in mind that we don't take leaks into considerations when we're doing any type of budget setting.
That's fine.
That's all.
Director Sparks.
So I just want to make sure I understand. The policy change will have two leak adjustments in a year and the appeal process to the board. But it's not going to contain this variable. The ordinance isn't going to contain that contains this reference to variable cost.
No.
No.
Okay.
You're correct, I guess.
Second.
Any further discussion?
There
was no public. Okay, so we take a roll call on this one, please.
Vice President Sennett?
Yes.
Director Kelly?
Yep.
Director Sparks?
Yes.
Director Cicinia?
Yes.
President Ohilski?
Yes. Brings us to the last agenda item.
Do we have to motion to continue this item?
I don't think so. A lack of a vote or failure of a vote is essentially a no vote.
Well, I think, typically an ordinance takes effect 3 days after you pass it. So and then and typically they're not retroactive. So in a way, I kind of think that would be good to make it clear that you will consider these two particular requests retroactive after the policy is adopted.
Do I have a motion to that effect?
I move that we consider these two requests retroactive after the ordinance.
Second.
Any discussion? Public comment? Seeing none, call the roll, please.
Director Kelly?
Yes.
Director Sennett? Vice President Sennett, I'm sorry.
Yes, no problem.
Director Sparks?
Yes.
Director Cicinia?
Yes.
President Ohilski?
Yes. policy.
Yeah, no, actually, this will be an ordinance.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
It's a change. Okay. Well, that will bring us up to the last item, which is 6C, which is request for nominations for the San Luis Obispo Local Area Formation Commission, LAFCO Special District Member. I don't have to recuse myself.
Thank you, President Ohilski. On October 11th, the district received notice of a vacancy in one of the special district member seats on LAFCO, the Local Agency Formation Commission. The seat will be vacant as David Brooks will not be seeking re-election to the Templeton Community Services District. His unexpired term will continue until December of 2012. LAFCO's mission statement, the Local Agency Formation Commission, is committed to serving the residents of San Luis Obispo County and the state of California by discouraging urban sprawl and encouraging the orderly formation and development of local agencies based on local conditions and circumstances. The Los Osos Community Services District Board President, Marshall Ohilski, has expressed interest in serving on LAFCO. Marshall's knowledge of LAFCO operations and charges and his interest in representing Los Osos and California's special districts make him a worthy candidate. It was my recommendation that the board nominate Marshall Ohilski as a special district member on the Local Agency Formation Commission, and that the board
I'll bring it back to the board for a motion or discussion.
I'll make a motion to nominate Marshall Ohilski as a special district member on the Local Agency Formation Commission, LAFCO, and comment that I think it's in the district's best interest to have representation for the agency. We certainly are affected by issues, particularly in the Choro and Los Osos Valley corridors. So.
I'd like to second that, but I'd like to amend the motion to include that the general manager send a letter of support for our nomination to the other special districts.
Solicit letters of support from the other special districts?
Send.
I thought you were already said that.
Make sure that you're
just trying to clarify.
Just make sure that that's part of it.
Yeah, I'd like to actually amend that request. I would volunteer to co-sign that and write that and sign that as a director as well. So, I think I'd like to have a director sign that.
I can support the amended second.
Yeah, I appreciate the support, but I'm not quite sure who's signing this letter. Oh, Dan and Joe? Okay, I'm sorry. I appreciate
that. Makes sense.
Okay, thank you. So can we have a motion then?
We did.
Can we have a second?
I did.
We have a roll call vote then?
Director Spar?
Yes.
Director Kelly?
Yes.
Director Cicinia?
Yes.
Vice President Sennett?
Yes.
President Ohilski.
I think I'll abstain just for... With that, that brings us to the end of the meeting, and we have director comments.
Yeah, I'll make a couple. First of all, we had the election. I do want to thank Mr. Delegato, Mr. Malkiant, Mr. Baltimore, Mr. Vogel, and Mr. Moodhart for running. I appreciate that, and in looking at the election from the clerk recorder, I noticed there were special districts that didn't even have go to an election because they didn't have candidates, and it's always beneficial for the community to have that choice. So I appreciate all five of them running. And the second item is on we have Veterans Day coming up on the 11th, 11 o'clock on the 11th day next Thursday, and want to express the appreciation of the veterans here.
Water process is the concern of water supply, seawater intrusion, and arbitrarily hooking up people just because we had a sewer. We had a sewer, therefore we could start building again. And part of this process has shown us that that's not true, that there's not going to just be automatically that the empty lots are going to be able to hook up. And there's a cost that comes with that. And as much as I am concerned about the cost, I am more concerned about the fact that we knew this was part of the process. There's going to be a cost. Some people have outright asked for moratorium, and there's a price for moratorium. It's almost a self-imposed moratorium. There's a cost with that. And as long as it's financed, if we can finance it in such a way that it helps, not defer, but if we can just finance it in such a way that the capital costs get funded over the longest period of time, the maximum amount of time, so over 70% of the project expense comes in the capital costs. It's not necessarily in the long-term O&M. Anyway, I'm just not as shocked and appalled as maybe some of the rest of the public, and that's just was my response, because I just, and I encourage people, I hope people come on the 29th to the Public Works presentation. I hope that they do ask questions. I do hope that they analyze for themselves and make that decision for themselves. So, thank you.
Director Cecina.
I want to thank the county for scheduling such an event on my birthday. It's going to be a very special night. I'm sure that Pavel will sing. And I think maybe we should think about, and I'm not sure how willing the county would be to come out here, but you know that they'd get tougher questions here than they will there, because they're only going to grab cards from people and select the most passive and neutral questions. So I would support grilling them here on the first week of December. And I also would like to thank Director Sparks for the gentlemanly way that he allowed me to enter the chute ahead of him at the Baywood Run. He caught me from behind with an eighth of a mile to go and then slowed his pace down so that I actually got to finish right beside him, and then he kind of nudged me into the chute. But we were both behind the guy with the coconut bra, so no one paid attention to us.
So
all that. And they've been the best turkeys that we've had. And so I encourage you to go to New Frontiers, participate in this benefit that they're offering for the Maxine Lewis Memorial Homeless Shelter. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'll just once again repeat, the meeting on November 29th, 6 o'clock, informal question and answers, formal presentation at 7. I encourage people to get as much information as they can. I don't think anybody's going to argue that the legal notice was sent out has a great amount of detail in it. And I think there'll be a number of staff members that will be at that presentation. And I think getting there early for the 6 o'clock portion for the informal questions and answers is when you're going to get most of your questions answered. We are still working on how we're going to, who we'll be able to get and how we can set up our consideration on December 2nd. Secondly, I'd like to thank the five candidates that ran. I think we had five good candidates. Unfortunately, two of them needed to lose because we only had three seats available. But I think the tenor of the campaign was very, very productive for the community, and it helps us to move forward in the future. So I'd like to congratulate the three that get the highest votes and got elected, but thank all five people for running and showing the interest in our community.
There was a campaign?
Pardon? Yeah, it was. And I think with that, that's about it, unless we have any further items. So we'll go ahead and adjourn. I would like to also, well, before we adjourn, I'd just like to thank the current board of directors. Next meeting will be your last meeting, and I appreciate all three of your service on the committee, on the board. So we will be doing something special, be forewarned. With that, I'll adjourn.